So this is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions in the San Carlos Computer Club with Bibiana this morning. Oh, and it looks like Emily as well. Good morning, Emily. Good morning, Bibiana.
Good morning.
Bibi has just finished a great creation for our club. It is the frozen hummingbird. This is beautiful, baby. It's so funny. What do you think?
That's great.
That's amazing.
In the great white north, the frozen hummingbirds will reign. Do you have a name for your artwork?
I have no name for my artwork.
No name for your artwork. We should call it something. Well, how long did it take you to make this? Or do you not want to say?
32 minutes?
Are you sure you want to share that with your fans? Maybe they need to think you work harder on this stuff.
No. 10 hours.
10 hours.
More. 20.
20 hours.
Oh, such a difficult piece. My greatest achievement yet. Took so long.
You heard that here first, folks. Right from the artist herself. We do these intros to introduce each week of the San Carlos Computer Club. And this is the intro for San Carlos Computer Club from May 18th, 2021.
Yay.
Yay. We're here every Tuesday. We start around 10 o'clock. And we talk about tech topics, the news, and check in with each other.
Yay, times two.
I am Scott Stimson, your host of the San Carlos Computer Club.
I'm Bibiana Stimson, the daughter.
And artist. And who are you?
I am Emily Stimson. And I just woke up like 5 minutes ago.
They forgot their tagline. It's the favorite child. Say, I'm the favorite child.
I'm the favorite child.
There we go.
Don't forget it.
Now everybody knows. Okay, well, this is it. There isn't much more to say. The artwork is from Bibi. Bibi's giving a thumbs up. Again, this is the intro for May 18th, 2021. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Until then, tech on.
Tech on.
Tech on.
Volume mixer.
Open volume mixer. That's right. And then from there, you'll see a list of all your sound sources as mixers. And you can go to the web browser you're using for this meet, and you can turn down just that.
Huh.
Did it have any effect?
I'm going to try again here.
I'm turning mine down on screen, but I really don't need to because it's the...
Okay, they're all three are down to the bottom.
And you're still hearing us.
Yeah.
Really loud.
And this is, oh, but see, the speaker headphone says real fast audio.
Well, that's what you want to have set is your speaker.
Oh, well, that's your, to this one.
Oh, I'm sorry, your headphones. Your headphones is what you want to have set.
Yeah. And so, I have those down to zero.
Can you
and
hear us?
Google Chrome. Yeah, you're just as loud. Yeah.
All right. There's something going on with your sound driver on your computer then.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's really odd that you can't just turn down, but I guess not because they're a Bluetooth device in... And so you're controlling the Windows sound option through the Bluetooth device.
Okay, I pulled them halfway out and now everything's fine. Low tech.
I don't know what that... You're halfway in? That's... Paul's halfway in?
Yeah. Halfway in the bag.
One disappeared.
I just pulled them out a little bit like this.
Paul, you're gone. All we have is your background.
Oh, I don't know what happens with the camera. Let's see here. Sometimes I have to turn the camera on down here.
There's also some, I'm hearing some static feedback coming from somewhere.
Yeah, I hear that too, but I don't think it's me. I'm just breathing occasionally.
Morning, Scott.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
Well, it's been a week of hell as far as tech goes, but other than that.
Good to hear.
Good to hear.
Well, it's statements like that that keep me in a job. is.
Yes, there you go. I got a quick question for you. Do you know much about LastPass at all?
Sure. I mean, I know more than the basics. Maybe that's enough.
Okay, well, here's my problem. I can log into LastPass on my phone and on the Linux machine, but when I try to log in on the Windows machine, it says the password's not good. My password doesn't work on the Windows machine.
You might try downloading the Windows 10 LastPass app.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, because there's an app for Windows 10, which I actually don't use, but I would want to verify that it's, you're having the same experience with the app. And then,
because I'm running it as a Opera extension.
Well, and that's it. Is every browser it would be an extension, and so you should try it in Chrome. You should try it in Opera. You should try it in Edge. In fact, I think maybe that's the version for Edge. Is the version that's Windows? No, that's not true. It's two different things. You've got the LastPass app in the Windows Store. And then you've also got an Edge add-on for LastPass.
I'm going to fire up Google or Chrome and try to log in on that side and see what happens.
Okay.
It absolutely refuses to recognize the password.
No, that's crazy. And you've just installed it. This isn't like some old extension that you're coming back to. Installed it.
Well, I've been using it all along. It's been installed for a while as an extension.
Oh, you might just try uninstalling it and reinstalling it. It might be an issue where there's something new going on and it didn't get installed.
What I did do a while back when I was fighting with my smart home, I upgraded to the pro version.
Ah, okay.
But it still, it works. You know, everything works on the phone and on the Linux machine and just not on this one. Anyway, I'm going to try.
Yeah, just try the, just having different behavior will help us diagnose what's going on. If it works on the.
I'm in.
Yeah, if it works on the. Sorry, Bill. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm just on Chrome. I'm just going to start up to try it here. Well, it's still waking up. Somebody's phone's ringing. Answer that, puppy. What the hell was that?
My buddy's band.
Oh.
His music's going out across the YouTube stream. This is a new thing I'm doing now, is I just open up the stream early and broadcast whatever. I got that happening on a computer over here to my right. It's, and then when we start, I turn that off and just jump into the stream.
Well, in Chrome, it doesn't like it either.
And you're confident in the password.
What's that?
You're absolutely confident of the password.
Well,
if you're confident of the password, I'd start looking for things like I would type the password out in Notepad or in some text field so you can see what's being typed out, because maybe you got a stuck key somewhere.
Well, no. LastPass has the button. It reveals the password.
Oh, you can see it's the password you expect it to be. Are you copying and pasting?
Yeah, maybe you're. I can see it.
Maybe you're getting a hidden character in there if you're copying and pasting.
No, I'm not copy pasting. I'm typing it in.
I can't think of anything else that would affect it, except services. You might check the LastPass status. Let me see if I can do that. I'm a big believer in doing all the simple stuff first, because it's always something simple. Even if it comes down to, is LastPass working?
Yeah, there's a laptop.
Change to one password.
Say that again? Change to one pass? Well, that article made it sound like a decent one. Sounded like a decent alternative.
That's what I'm using now.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it until you mentioned it.
Scott,
one password has it.
Say that again, Bill.
Just before I forget, something put on your list today. I keep getting notices on my iPhone that Amazon Photos has unlimited storage for photos and unlimited size. I don't know, is that new?
Testing, 1, 2, testing. Can you hear me from this microphone okay?
Yes.
Good. It's not new, but they are pushing it really hard because it's their opportunity. Because Google is going out, right? So if you want to continue to have a free experience of photos being stored unlimited until Bezos says the same thing that Google has said, then you can move over to Amazon's photo storage. That's what's been amazing to watch over the years is how each one of these kind of towers of technology keep migrating into the same spaces. And so now they've grown up. We got Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google. They're all competing for the same customer using their equivalency service. All right, I found the last past status page, and it says all systems operational. I'm going to stick that in our chat group list here. So you can look at it. It says all systems operational. It looks like it's an easy enough thing to check. If you're having problems with LastPass, you can go to status.lastpass.com, and it'll tell you everything's up and where it's up.
Status.lastpass.com.
Mm-hmm. They haven't had an incident since yesterday. It says here, May 17th, there was an issue where they couldn't log in from the European Union. So that's not you. Maybe it's just Canada. You know, it says right here, United States, Europe, and Australia. So maybe we're just riding the shirt tails of whatever service is out there.
Here's my problem. Like, I can log in from the phone or my Linux machine here. It's just the Windows machine. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's very strange. And you can't use the app either on the Windows machine.
I'm downloading the Windows app now.
Okay.
No.
From the Microsoft Store.
The LastPass app?
Yeah, the LastPass app for Windows. I'm going to start up mine. I haven't used it in a long time and just see if I can sign into it.
Scott, there's two of you. No, what's on your screen?
What's on my screen? Oh, I put a slideshow of album art on my screen.
Oh. Okay. So you guys were already talking. I just had to take a phone call. But Amazon Photo? There was something about Amazon Photo?
Yeah, well, you know, Amazon Photo, Bill, I got signed into it without issue. The app allowed me to sign in with no problems, and I know I'm already signed in on my extensions, on my browser extensions. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I hope our whole meeting doesn't go like that. But so I'm successfully using the service. I'm not sure why Windows would be having a problem with it. And Cheryl, to answer your question, Bill was just announcing about how Amazon has unlimited storage being marketed to him right now, which has been going on for a while. Amazon has had an unlimited storage offering for a while. They've just been remarketing it hardcore because June 1st is coming up.
So it's included with our Amazon Prime membership that we pay every month?
Yeah, that's right.
It's unlimited?
Yes.
And I don't know what it looks like, but I'll have to look at it. It came up on my computer the other day, and I logged in on Bill's Amazon.
I've never pursued it, but I would think from a mobile perspective, you'd have to have an app, Amazon Photos, installed in your phone or your tablet. I haven't looked into it at all. The last thing I wanted was another sync of photos. But they do offer photos on the Fire TV, and so that's one of the ways you can get photos on your TV, like a digital picture frame.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Oh, okay.
But my question is, in the 27 pages of legalese, does it say we can use your photos for anything?
I'm sure it does. I mean, I'm absolutely certain it does.
Answer the phone, Fred.
Hello? Hello?
You want me to get that, Fred? Last pass login fail. I'm doing a Google search on Windows 10 LastPass login fail. LastPass fails to retain login with Edge. What do you do if you can't log in to LastPass? Fix LastPass autofill not working. There's nothing here. Bill,
oh,
some.
What's
your screen? What's the error message it gives you? Is it a password? Check your username.
Yeah, it's my
email address.
My email address.
Make sure it's the right email address.
Well, I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, just double check it. I mean, again, we all make silly mistakes. It's...
Oh, wait a minute. I tried on the app, and it failed. So it said check your email. I went to the email, and it says login attempt blocked. It's blocked, not failed. Someone just used your master password to try to log into your account from the device, or look, we don't recognize LastPass. Block this. You should take a closer look. Was this you? Verify new device or location.
Yeah, there you go. Me. Okay, that's a nice security feature.
Well, yeah, but here's my problem. I got no such notification when I tried on the extension.
Well, again, I would check the username. Just make sure you're using the right email. But at least that explains why it didn't work on your app.
Okay, let's hang in here. Let's try this app again.
Okay.
Gmail.com.
I am going to...
Username is correct.
I'm starting up our stream right now. Even though we still have a couple of minutes, I don't want to think about it because I'm already knee-deep in tech ideas.
Okay, now it's happy. It just didn't recognize this device.
Okay.
But it let me log in this time.
Awesome.
You didn't recognize the device. You didn't.
So it's an extension. It's something about the extension you're using. Have you tried an extension in another, like Edge?
Well, I tried it in
Chrome,
Opera, and then I tried in Chrome.
Okay. Well, and what's unfortunate is those are very similar extensions because they're all based on Chrome.
Well, I'm going to go back now and try one of the extensions.
So Cheryl, is my slideshow distracting? Should I turn it off?
No, it's fine.
We always have just this sitting there. I'm like, you know what? I could just put up something that's flipping around.
Well, do you usually have something sitting there?
Yeah, normally this is sitting there.
Oh, okay.
You can see that. Yeah. Yes, sir. Hold on.
One thing that I like about 1Password is that the password is unique but memorable. It'll be several words separated by characters. So it might be tree, car, unbelievable, intrepid, or something like that. And with separated by dashes or asterisks or something like that. So it's something that you can memorize, but it's 16 or 20 characters long.
Oh yeah, right. Because it's easy to remember. That's one of their algorithms. Is would you like a password that's easy to remember? Is that what you're saying, Paul?
Yeah, that's right.
Wasn't it Trump's intelligence test that he had to remember pencil? Sorry,
That's right. That's funny, Cheryl. I didn't think of that. Actually, what I thought of in terms of passwords is Johnny Mnemonic.
That's why he's got somebody on his staff that remembers his passwords for him.
That's right.
Somebody on his staff that remembers his name for him.
He uses LastPass for it all. You know, you can put anything in LastPass. His name, his date of birth, birth certificate.
Anyways,
Bill has someone on his staff too that remembers all the passwords. I don't use LastPass.
So, Scott.
Yes, sir.
It allowed me to log in now under the Opera extension. For some reason, it didn't recognize this my computer. It stopped recognizing it, but it did not give me any indication of.
You didn't get an email notification saying, "Hey."
I didn't get it. No, it's really strange. Anyway, it's happy now.
Awesome. Then it's working. There is an open source, I'm having trouble remembering the name of it, but there's an open source LastPass style solution that I've been meaning to try out that I haven't had a chance to yet. What do they call it?
I got really frustrated when I was trying to work with my smart home and remembering passwords for everything, and I just said, no, enough of this crap. Like, it has to be done on the iPhone. And I just said, no, we're going pro on this thing. Because you could only go either Windows or phone. So now I got LastPass on both for this year.
I really like LastPass, but I'm interested in exploring other password managers, especially because Microsoft's doing their own thing. Hey, Jim.
Scott. Scott, let's just be honest here. You just like screwing around with all kinds of stuff.
I do. I always think my job is just learn, just to sit here and learn as much as I can to help people so they don't have to do the learning themselves.
That's exactly right.
And I just did a Google search for open source password manager. I was trying to remember the one that I had been recommended that I haven't investigated yet. And it's called Bitwarden. But what popped up below it didn't pop up before. I just opened them up. Key Password Safe and Passbolt. There's actually these three claiming to be open source password managers. So this might be an interesting thing to check out as far as a comparison between these three potentially free and useful password managers.
In your spare time, you just get right on that.
That's right. That's right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just stick this on a to-do list where it'll gather dust because it'll be at the bottom of all my other to-dos.
Oh, well, it'll keep clean under there.
That's right. Daga, LastPass alternatives. Maybe this will be a topic for next week. Maybe. We'll see what happens.
Scott.
Yes, sir.
Before we get the meeting, Carolyn's been trying to call Yuya.
Oh, yeah.
And can I confirm the number over the air, or is that not a good thing?
If it's our office number, that's fine. Her cell phone number, I think she'd rather have not on the air. But you know what I can do is I'll just type it into the chat.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Because we've been leaving messages, but we have no idea whether it's actually her phone number.
We only left one. It sounded like a guy's voice. Yeah. Mexican.
Oh, that doesn't sound like the right phone number then.
No, that's what I thought, Scott. That's why I'm checking.
Yeah. And here's the embarrassment is I have to check because I always forget. I don't know anybody's phone number anymore. Not my kids, not my wife's. It's awful.
I got to look up my own phone number.
Right?
I'm serious. You know, I keep forgetting what it is. I have to go on the phone and check what's the phone number.
There's a blonde woman who works at our pool here in Qualicum Beach, and she's renowned for her blondeness and so on. And I asked her for her number. It was our exchange, and then 1234.
We thought. Well, that wasn't hard to remember, was it?
Oh, that was they gave her the blondest number in the book.
There you go.
Lovely, thanks, Scott. Okay, Jim,
gotta look
for
the chat, honey.
Okay.
Okay, Scott, just one little point here of interest. We are expecting snow this evening.
I heard you talking about that.
Okay, but this morning, like somebody said last week, you know, the hummingbirds are about to show up, you know, get your feeder out so they have something to eat. And I looked out, and here we have one hummingbird looking at our hummingbird feeder. and we're expecting snow tonight, and I feel sorry for those poor little buggers.
That's right. My gosh.
Yeah, the lower mainland had a big thunderstorm, which it rarely gets. It woke everybody up that was asleep at around 11 o'clock last night. Vancouver, and huge power outages and everything. That was quite a shock.
Some icy wind here today, too.
Yeah.
20 degrees yesterday, though.
But no rain, yay.
Oh, pardon me. Oh, my gosh. I'm probably going to get copyright strike. I just realized I was playing copyrighted music. While we're streaming, I might have to mute it. I'm such a bad YouTuber. You know, I got a copyright strike on my other account. I've been, just for giggles, disassembling, doing repairs online. So, like, if you're ever bored, you can watch me take apart and put back together a laptop, some piece of equipment. And I play my buddy's music in the background because I know it's copyright free. I've got his permission to use it. I don't have to worry about it. And, of course, on one of these videos, I've got a copyright strike. And now I'm so gun shy. I mean, I don't care whether I monetize the video or not. There isn't enough interest to be concerned about whether I can make money off of advertising on it. I'm tempted because his band is like, yeah, you should dispute it. We've got your back. You've got our permission to use that music, and it's not theirs. And still, YouTube's automated system for appealing it. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. The YouTube system for appealing is all automatic, and there isn't a category for precisely this experience. And I'm really scared that I may trigger something that causes a backlash on my YouTube channel, because they've never made it clear in any of these instances, except for this. This is a very clear instance where it's somebody else's song, and it's being claimed as a different artist. Well, that's odd. That number didn't work?
No.
That's the right number. Are you dialing it with the 5-2? Oh, maybe you don't.
Carolyn, are you using the star function, or are you on a cell phone? What are you on?
I'm on a cell phone. iPhone.
Okay.
iPhone. I think if you use the star.
The plus, right?
The plus.
Yeah. If you hold down. If you hold down 0, it'll turn into a plus.
Just a minute. I'm just doing it now. Yes.
And then 52622.
Okay,
I'll try that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. That plus on a cell phone is like what we used to do with the 01 or the 001.
And experience has taught me that, because I've tried phoning Mexico before. You have to have that plus sign on an iPhone.
I'm using a Mexican phone, so let's see if it works.
Yeah, it's a Mexican cell phone.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. You may not need the 5-2 since it's a Mexican cell phone, but you are in Canada, so it's hard to say. Sounds like somebody picked up, though.
I think they're just connected now.
Excellent.
I hear her giggling on the phone.
I bet my wife's in the living room talking to her.
There you go.
Well, hey, welcome. I'm glad you guys decided to spend your Tuesday morning with us. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and I'm happy to be with you today like we do every Tuesday. We bring some topics to talk about. We try and solve some people's tech problems. We chat about the news. We give COVID updates to see how we're doing in our respective locations. So this is it. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. Sometimes we have about twice this many people, but you guys got emails this morning, I hope.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So that way I know that they are going out. And in our typical fashion, there is no real set agenda. I did bring some topics. And if you've got topics, please let me know, because I'm interested in hearing what you guys have brought. But I am here to help, to answer questions, and to be available when... Oh, and Linda's here now. Linda, now you're late. She was here an hour early, and now she's late. I just did the intro, and you missed it.
Check out the cup, Scott.
Hey, it's Marvin the Martian and Winnie the Pooh. And my classic Star Wars cup, and we are just Disney throughout.
There you go.
That should be the part of the introduction. Everybody has to show off their coffee cup or a funny hat or something.
There you go.
All of this background. Oh, there's James.
What do you got there, James? I haven't seen that one. Jungle Gems.
Oh, Jungle Gyms. Okay,
that's
Jungle
great.
Gym now.
Well, has anybody brought anything at the top of the hour that we should be talking about? I think we just resolved the last few things we were talking about while we were getting warmed up.
Well, I had something, but I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
So, hey, before I forget, I'd like to get a pretty name on my YouTube channel. Like it would say YouTube/Computer Club or San Carlos Computer Club. And I can't do that without at least 100 subscribers. So if you are somebody that has a Google account, if you could take a moment and just subscribe to the San Carlos Computer Club, if you haven't already, I want to start ticking that number up to at least 100 so I can beautify the name.
So we just go to YouTube and search for San Carlos Computer Club? Is that the plan?
Yeah, even better than that, you could just go to sccclub.org and click on one of the YouTube videos there. It'll take you to YouTube.
Or you could put the link in the chat right now.
Well, yeah, I could do that too. You know, that should be part of it, shouldn't it? It should be like as I'm talking about subscribing to YouTube, I should provide you with a link so it's so easy for you to do.
The easier it is, the better.
I'm going to do that now, Bill, and you are going to continue with the topic you were about to suggest.
Okay, subscribe didn't come up. I've got the live chat going.
Hold on a second. I'm going to where the subscription should happen, but it's going slow. Come on, do your thing. Oh, I hope I'm not moving this slow. Everything on the stream is working great, but it's my my internet experience in general, just surfing web pages.
I like Paul's Arizona Turkey he's got there.
You know what I forgot is I created a domain name called youtube.sccclub.org that takes you right to the channel. That's what I should.
I'm subscribed already. That's why. You have 30 subscribers so far. We got 70 to go.
We got 70 to go, and there's 6 of you now. And most of you are probably already subscribed.
Well, not me.
Well, that link that I just stuck will take you. It redirects to this channel. Oh, and I finally got the channel up. So here's the direct link to the channel in the chat room.
I'm not getting a good crisp view of that.
Well, Jim, go ahead and click on the chat bubble in your Google Meet client there. It should look like a square dialog box. It's a button up at the top.
I see that.
And that'll bring up everything we've shared in the chat.
Okay, good. I got that.
Okay, I'm sending it out by Messenger to everybody I know. No, to people that know about it. So, Carolyn and, yeah.
I'm going to spam my workplace with this request.
Anyway, Scott, I had a question.
Yes.
Have you gotten your weekly... technical glitch out of the way on your systems? You always have something going on.
Every time
I haven't heard about it.
Every time I think I've got it worked out, something goofy happens. Like I was telling
you
that I was doing a live stream of a PC disassemble yesterday, and it was beautiful. Everything was running great. I've got a workstation over here behind me where I do this kind of work right here. I set up a camera, a phone camera right here from the top, and you get this down view of my workbench here, and I can disassemble, and I got music playing. So it's going out and it's running great. And I got like maybe 10 more minutes of work that I'm going to do. I'm going to put the cover back on the bottom of it. And it just freezes up, and the whole stream shuts down on my laptop. I can't say that won't happen today, because there was no reason for it to have a problem the other day, and it all came back. I mean, after I'd shut it, I was done. I shut everything down. Everything went back to working right after that. So I don't know what's going on. Linda, yay. I think your speakers are bleeding over. I'm going to hit the mute button on you right now.
She just wanted to say something.
I think she's agreeing with me. She's saying, you know what's going on, and it's okay. Go ahead and mute me.
No.
No.
I was looking. I found the sscc.org on the YouTube.
Oh, good.
I'll mute now.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I think I've got the technical issues sorted out. I have a couple of topics that I brought along that I thought would be very helpful specifically to Bill and Cheryl, but people in general. That I'd like to hit just at the top of the hour so that we feel like we have enough time for it. And then I've got some other topics here that I thought would be interesting. But Bleeping Computers has just put out an article to outline the 10 Windows 10, or I'm sorry, the best Windows 10 commands to diagnose your internet connection.
Hello.
Now, there's a few things in here that don't transfer to the Macintosh, but most of them do. They might be typed a little differently on a Mac. They're definitely done from a different program, but it's the same idea. These are commands that you can type at your command line to try and sort out problems with your internet. And I thought that we could just look at it real quick. Let me put this article in the – I'm going to put this link in our chat. And I thought I'd quickly go through a couple of them. I'm trying to put it in the chat, and I'm not doing it in the right spot. Paste. There we go. It's by Bleeping Computers. If you don't know Bleeping Computer, they're the ones that know that host malware scanners, and they do security checks on stuff. They're a credible website. That's what it comes down to. And so they start this list of about six things, and the first one they start with is NSLookup. And to run these commands, like I was mentioning, you have to do it from a command prompt. In Windows, you can do the command prompt by clicking the start menu and typing CMD. If you can see on my screen there, it pops up at the top of the Windows search, the command prompt. On a Macintosh computer, you're looking for a program called Terminal. It's usually in your Launchpad or in your extras, in your applications folder, a program called Terminal. In Windows, it's typically, classically, it's white on black. On Macintosh, it's classically black on white. So if you're in Windows, you've got a black window by default. If you're in Macintosh, you've got a white window. But these things are just the path to the program, and those are nuances you'll see between the two platforms. But the idea is exactly the same. Regardless of whether they have spelled the names differently, they do the same job.
So, how come yours is blue?
I don't know.
White on blue. Just because. Anyways,
I don't know. It's supposed to be black. Maybe years ago I changed it at some point. I probably did because you can. And I do stuff like that. Somewhere in here I probably set it to – oh, that's weird. Oh, yeah, here it is. Blue, 80% blue. I don't know why I did that.
Okay.
No. There. Now it's black.
And can you also present instead of...
Sure.
Yeah. Because when I pin it, it's kind of...
Fuzzy?
Yeah.
Is it fuzzy? Okay, let me do this here. So the first program on this list is NSLookup. NSLookup is a program that checks website names. If you type in NSLookup and a website like CNN.com, it comes back with the IP address, or it should. And what we're looking at right here, we have verified that our DNS works because we got a result. Down here at the bottom, it shows the answer to CNN.com, what its mother domain is, what its all-time final destination address is, and its numeric address, its final resolved name address right next to its actual physical numeric address. And because we were able to reach that, what that's telling us is that our DNS is working. Our ability to look up name addresses is working. If we had executed this command, NSLookup, I'm going to put some fictitious info in here, then eventually it will fail out because it's not able to find that name address. And this is a horrible example because it's decided to fail out on everything. I wonder if I've got some security turned on because that's the same address, isn't it? This is what I get for not testing this stuff before presenting it. There's probably a logical reason why it's doing this.
So this is to check connectivity of your Wi-Fi or specific sites?
Well, this is to check a couple of things for you. But if I can't describe it correctly, then it's not going to help you. Let me create a situation. NSLookup, I'm going to change to server 1.1.1.1. No, server 1.1.1.1. So I have switched to the 1.1.1.1 server, and I'm going to look up sancarloscomputerclub.org. And it's using the 1.1.1.1 server. It shows that right now on my screen. Wow, that is weird, though. This taco, I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I may have to readdress this application because the results it's giving us, there's probably some reason for it, but I don't recognize it. This Des Taco name that's at the end there.
Hmm.
And really all I cared about was to verify that our DNS is working correctly. If your DNS isn't working correctly, you're not looking up names. And if you can't look up names, then yeah, that is really bizarre. If you can't look up names, then you can't bring up web pages. You can't connect to services. You could have a totally healthy internet connection, but because you use systems that use names and the names can't be looked up, you can't go anywhere. Kind of like having a phone and no phone book in a new town where you don't have any friends. You can't call for pizza. You can't call the neighbor because you can't look up the names to the numbers. In this case, it's working, but it's giving me results that I find very strange. This Destaco, I'm not familiar with what that is, and so I'm gonna drop NS lookup as one of our subjects right now, and put it on a list for follow up because I want to understand what's happening in my network. You may be having a different experience. It may be related to my Telmex connection. It may be related to I use 1.1.1.1 as my main DNS for my entire network. And so it might have something to do with their encrypted DNS channel. It might have something to do with being on Juan's network right now. I can't tell you, but I'm going to investigate it and figure it out. What's important is that there is a intelligent answer, and that's what it's getting. Let me change my server to something that won't give me an intelligent answer. So I've set it to something that I assume is not a name server, and if I try and look up from it, it should fail. Yeah. Yeah, there it is. It's just failing. And that's what a failed name address looks like. So in this case, I intentionally set it to a server, a DNS server, and it isn't a server. That address, that 12.12.12.12.12.12 isn't a DNS, and so it can't return the correct information. And so this is what it looks like when it can't return the correct information. It's a failure. Anyway, I wish I was getting more intelligent answers out of the rest of it. I would keep talking about it, but I'm going to put it on my list to follow up on it.
Scott, does it do these all in reverse? Like if you put one thing in, it'll give you the other?
Well, there are options for that. So if we were to look at the help on any of these commands, thank you for asking for that. And that help would look different on a Macintosh. NS lookup dash question mark dash H. No, there it is. If you type NS lookup by itself, it goes into the NS lookup prompt. And if you type help, it gives you a list of all the different options that are available for it. And so there are options that you can use to look up addresses. But really, I mean, there's just a couple of simple things that I think are very helpful to know. You don't have to be sophisticated with this. You can use NSLookup, which is available on the Macintosh, to look up an address you're trying to get at. And if it fails, you know that you've got an issue somewhere. If the next NSLookup you do is a success, and that's why I use CNN.com all the time, because it's short and it's easy to remember. And I expect it to be up 24/7. I expect it to always work, kind of like a Yahoo.com. I always expect it to work. And so if it doesn't work, then I know the failure is in the DNS. What's causing the DNS to fail? Is it my connection to the internet? Is the DNS inside my area? Like maybe if I change the DNS, I could be on the internet and working. Maybe the router that I'm using, maybe the DNS software in that router was failing. It's keeping me connected to the internet, but maybe the DNS is going on and on again, off again. So maybe you're having spotty internet experiences. This kind of command can help you sort out if you're having a DNS problem. And we will revisit it next week when I understand what's going on in my network. There is two other commands I use all the time. that are in this article. One is called Ping and the other is called Traceroute. And what this is just to go out and touch a computer on the internet. I'm going to just type pingcnn.com. And CNN is sending me back a packet of information. I'm sending it to them and they're sending it back to me. It's telling me where it came back from. It's showing me how big it is. It's showing me how long it took. I added a qualifier to the command, a hyphen T, which means to just perpetually go on. That's a Windows thing. If you use a ping on any other system, like a Linux system or a Macintosh system, it will perpetually do the test by itself by default, and you have to do a control C to stop it. So all this is doing is making sure that you are getting a good ping between you and your destination. In this case, I'm getting a great ping. I'm getting double-digit milliseconds from CNN.com that's way out there on the internet. I'm getting double-digit milliseconds. That's a very fast reply. But this ping command, you can bring it inside your network. If you're trying to sort out problems with your network, you could hit your router. I'm going out to a router right now. Now you can see, let me do it perpetually in Windows by adding the hyphen T. You see the time it takes for a packet to go out to the router and come back to me will stagger around single to double digit numbers. And that's actually not my router. That's Juan's router. So that's going out through my router, through my load balancing router, through my Wi-Fi connection to his repeater to his router. And I'm getting single to double digit speeds. So what that tells me is there's nothing wrong between me and Juan as far as connections. And that speed we were getting with CNN.com is so fast, it tells me I'm not having an internet problem at the moment. But I could let this run in a window, and I do on one of my other computers. I let this ping run all the time, 24/7, so that I can look over to the window whenever I've got this question of the quality of my internet to see if those numbers has spiked up to triple digits or quadruple digit numbers. A healthy internet connection, you should be looking at tens of milliseconds up to almost hundreds of milliseconds. But you shouldn't be living in hundreds of milliseconds. And thousands of milliseconds to get a packet of information back is an indicator that you have a really flaky connection. There's something there. This, again, is the smallest piece of information, so it should be able to come back to you really fast. You're not asking for a video to go across the internet and come back. You're asking for the smallest packet of information. So it doesn't matter what your capacity of internet is. This is checking your speed of internet, if you follow what I mean, your reliability of internet, that connection. I'm not on camera anywhere, am I? I'm trying to make eye contact, and I'm not on camera anywhere. Can you see me on camera now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott, one of the things when we had the technician here, he talked about the difference between speed of internet and signal strength. So speed and strength were the two terms that he used, and I didn't understand. Okay, so speed is how many whatever is per second, right?
Yeah, it's bits per second.
Bits per second. How do they measure strength of a signal?
Well, that's the only thing I can imagine he's talking about is your Wi-Fi strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if that's the case, you measure it all the time when you're looking at your bars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But the bars are not a representation of speed. They are a representation of how well your wireless device is connected to your wireless router. So you could have full bars and no internet connection.
Right. Okay. And he said that our system, like we're in a rural acreage, and that we figured out all the fiber optics versus coax stuff question. But he said that coming into our homes, that the signal strength is so high that he put a pad. I think he called it a pad.
Now, if he's talking about signal strength out on the porch or out on the pole, then he's talking about his own signal strength. He's talking about what the cable company can offer you.
Right, right. That's what he was talking about. And he said that it had to be basically, in my mind, he was saying it had to be dampened down for our devices to work.
Okay. Are they providing internet to you wirelessly? Did they do they have an antenna that's feeding into your house?
No.
No.
That's really weird. I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know why you would have to dampen a signal from a cable. You're talking about from the coaxial that comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what that would be about. I don't know why you would do that. In all my experience with cable internet, all you want is better, stronger signal. So,
as opposed to faster.
Well, they're two separate things, but the stronger would allow you to go faster if a weak signal is what's causing your speed loss. Like the stronger the signal, when you're talking about the signal, we're talking about the quality of, let me use an analogy. If you had a road with a beautiful sheet of asphalt, like we have out to out on the road to Loma del Mar, we have a really nice sheet of asphalt now between the storage up almost to the old gym. It's beautiful. But you can't drive highway speeds on it. But there's no potholes in it, if you follow my analogy. The potholes are like the signal strength. And so whatever media that you're in, if you're having speed problems because there's potholes, then your goal is to fill those potholes, is to fix that signal strength. But if your road to begin with isn't a highway, you're not going to go very fast. It's just you'll go faster if you take care of the potholes. Does that make sense? Is that a good analogy?
So the road is the signal strength.
Yeah, the road is the signal strength, and the speed is what kind of road it is. Is it a highway? So
signal strength has potholes.
Yeah,
then your speed is going to be less.
That's right. The signal strength is going to be the condition of the road, and your speed is going to be the kind of road. Is it a highway? Is it a dirt road? You know what I mean? Is it a gravel road? And then the condition of that road is going to determine how fast you can go across it. The kind of road is going to determine the capacity of speed. Gosh, now I'm getting way too confused.
Yeah.
Let's go back to signal strength is like potholes or not. Speed is like the kind of road you're using. Now, you have to slow down on the highway every time there's a big pothole in your way. That's like you're on the highway, you're on the internet superhighway. A pothole would be lousy signal strength. So you go from 100 megabits a second down to 1 megabit a second because you have lousy signal strength.
But
you
could have. How does it relate to buffering on your.
Exactly. Buffering would be like a traffic jam because of the pothole. Everybody's having to slow down to go around this. And so it's creating that compression wave of buffer.
It's a darn tope.
A tope. That's right. We got to stop or I'm going to start mixing bad metaphors. It's not enough to have one bad metaphor. I'll bring in multiple bad metaphors.
One thing you might mention with ping.
Yes.
Not all sites will respond on a ping.
That's correct. Yes.
You can turn it off.
Fred, that's a great thing to bring up is that if you try and ping a site out there, just a random site, it may have ping turned off as a security issue. They don't want you to be able to just go out and touch them. That's why I like to, when I'm trying to troubleshoot, I like to stick with addresses that I know work. So before I get into troubleshooting something, I've already got a handful of addresses. Like those are the two, my two go-tos are CNN.com and Yahoo.com. They always tend to have a ping server. I bet Google has a ping server too. It used to be typical. Everything could be pinged. But because of security, because you can write software that will just blanket large lists of IP addresses and ping to see if they're active, then some people have chosen or some organizations have chosen to stop allowing ping through their environments. I just pinged Google. That's a good one too. So what the ping means, all the way to Google from here, I'm sending information at 54 millibits a second, or milliseconds. Yeah, one packet of information traverses in 74 milliseconds. That's what I'm seeing. That is a good speed for a ping. That packet of information is 32 bytes. A byte is the equivalent of a letter on your keyboard, like an A or a B or a C. So you could think of that as I just sent 32 letters to Google and they sent it back to me in 74 milliseconds. So again, You can use ping to hop through your networks to try and find a problem. If you're still looking at my screen, I'll ping CNN.com. Let's say that failed. I'd be like, oh, I'm not getting to CNN. Let's see if I can even get out to my router. I'll ping Juan's router because I understand how his systems are working. I'm not putting this stuff on the screen because I don't want to breach any security. And so I've pinged that router address. Maybe that's failing. Maybe I'm getting a fail. I'll show you what a fail looks like. I'll just ping some ridiculous number that probably doesn't exist. And this will look like a fail. Request timeout. Request timeout. Request timeout. This is the sign that it is not out there. The first thing you do when you get a request timeout is you look up at the ping line to make sure you didn't make a typo. Because this is classic computers. There is no 95% correct. If you're not 100% correct, it's wrong. So if you get this request timeout, you're troubleshooting your connection, you get a request timeout, the first thing you assume is you made a typo. So you double check that you typed it correctly, and if you did, then you get deeper into where the problem might be. CNN's not working. My Juan's router isn't working. Let me check my router. I've got a router that I'm using that it's plugged into. Oh, wait, I changed my topology. This is the look of something. Oh my gosh, that router's failing. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, that's not the router I'm using. I'm using this router.
And Scott?
Yes, sir.
Intermittent big numbers on the ping is like livestock on the road.
Yeah, well, I would go back to the tope or the potholes, because if it's not random intermittent, like if you're experiencing throughout the day large increases in time, then there may be something unstable about your internet connection. I want you to take a look at this. This is the closest router to me, and I'm just going to keep it running. Look at how long it's taking. I actually have an Ethernet cable between my laptop and this router, and this is how fast I expect it to go. 1 millisecond to 3 milliseconds. Look, it went up to 13 milliseconds. I hope that's not a sign that I have some like crosstalk interference or some failing device. But in general, it's right around 1 millisecond to 3 milliseconds. That is about as fast as you can send information across the cable and have it come back to you. If you're not getting this in the same circumstances, there may be something up with your equipment. So if you've got a cable between your computer and your router, you're pinging your router, and these are double-digit, triple-digit, quadruple-digit numbers, then there is a problem in your hardware. It's either your computer, which I would doubt, your router, which is a good possibility, especially if the router's getting old, or it could be your cable. It could be something about your cable that has gotten old. Maybe it got run over by a desk chair and hurt some of the insulation. So maybe it's exposed some of the conduit. I'm forgetting my electronics training now. Insulator, conductor, some of the conductor. Couldn't have said it in Spanish. Maybe it's exposed some of the copper conductor. And so you've damaged it. And so this is how it's resulting, is it's getting some interference on it. Maybe it's dirty. Maybe it got sticky. And so it's not making a great connection. Or the ends of the Ethernet jack have gotten oxidation on them. And so you're getting a signal, but it's a weak signal. Anyway, these are all different ways to help you sort out where your connection may be having a problem. That's ping, and that's as easy as it is. It doesn't need to be more complicated than that. You should be able to touch computers on the internet as long as they allow you to touch them. If you've got this list open, the next one on it is Traceroute. This is a basic program just like ping, and what it does is it allows you to trace out to a computer. It basically shows you a map between you and that computer. Where am I? Here we go. You'll notice under Windows, it is spelled TraceRT. That's the word. And you just do the same thing. You put a domain name, a fully qualified domain name, afterwards. Traceroute space, or TraceRT space CNN.com. And this builds a map. Oh, I'm going to take that off the screen too. What I should see in this map is I should see my routers, my internet provider, all the way to the qualified domain name. If you're watching this, we're watching hop through my local router to my sublocal router to Juan's system to Telmex's WiMAS interface that Juan's connected to Telmex's WiMAS interface to Uninet's interface, which is still infinitum Telmex, but a different company, to their large scale connection to their CNN connection, or at least to their route to their CNN. So that was very successful. It showed us the hops, how long it took to get to each one of those. Now, when you get outside of your local, if you're looking at my screen, you'll see these first three are my local network. If these first three have extremely high numbers, then you've got a problem in your network that you might be able to resolve. After those first three are all outside of your control. If you have extremely high numbers, triple digits, quadruple digit numbers coming off of these following numbers, then the very best you might be able to do is get a hold of the people that are in charge of those organizations and tell them they have a problem. They have a routing problem that's costing time. They're probably having a failing router somewhere. And in the work that I used to do for Maquilas all the time, it wouldn't be uncommon for me to look up that address, find out what organization's in charge of it, and call them and try and report that we're observing this problem. A lot of these problems go undetected until somebody calls in to say, hey, you know you're having a problem? So that's Traceroute. And you can use that on a Macintosh by spelling out in its entirety, Traceroute, R-O-U-T-E, on a Macintosh, space, domain name, or address. I'm going to Traceroute to Juan's system right now as a numeric address, but I spelled it on a Macintosh, so it failed. Windows is the only operating system I know that abbreviates it RT. Linux and all the Linux distributions I've used and all the Macintoshes I've used, it is Traceroute, two words put together with no space. So here is just a Traceroute across the routers that I connect to. My local router, my sub-local router, I call it my sub-local router. That's my load balancing router. That's the one that takes two internet connections and turns it into one. And then the third one there is Juan's connection, which seems to be really stable at the moment. And that's Traceroute. Simple, short. You can creatively use it to check your internet connection, the quality of your internet connection.
Hey, Scott.
Yes, Fred.
Try doing a Traceroute to either a gov or a mail site that won't talk back to you.
Okay.
Or a commercial site like a bank where they won't.
Whitehouse.gov. Is that still a thing? This is going to whitehouse.gov. What some of these organizations will do is they'll let you get close and then you'll be blocked by a firewall. Is that what you're getting at, Fred?
Yeah, well, or you won't get a response, but you'll get through something and it won't have a name.
Yeah, it'll leave like asterisks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it could be a fully successful Traceroute, but at some point in this map, wow, look at that. I got all the way to the domain whitehouse.gov without anyone trying to stop me.
If you look at that one, all you got was you didn't get a name, you got the IP.
What do you mean?
I'm up number 9. There was no name. The rest of them have names.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, that could just be an unresolvable router out there. Like, they just haven't assigned a name to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you go through, you know, like trying to get to a bank or trying to, they've got them so tight that you can't get responses out of them a lot of times.
Anyway, a couple of simple programs that can help you diagnose your internet health. And I identify where problems exist.
So, Scott, this is Paul.
Yes, Paul.
And when I'm at home, I've got two computers sitting next to each other. This one connected to the internet through my mesh. And the other one says, connected, no internet. So which command would from this list, or is there a command in this list that would help me find out what's wrong?
Say that again, Paul.
Okay, there's two computers sitting next to each other.
Okay.
Both have used my mesh system simultaneously before, but now the older computer, when I connect to the mesh, it says connected, no internet.
And you have not been able to get past that. There's something.
No. And, you know, I look up troubleshooting and it says reboot your computer. I've done that. And then it says reboot the modem, reboot router, reboot this, that, and the other, and nothing else.
Well, I don't want to jump ahead, but the last one on here might help you out. Let me go on to the next thing, and then we'll come back to that, Paul.
Oh, okay. I thought you were done with this topic.
Well, there was one more. There's one more command that I wanted to highlight, mostly because I didn't know it existed. I mean, there's actually a couple other things, but there's this one called ping path. And I had never heard of this until this article, didn't even know it existed. It's kind of a combination of the two commands, ping path. You give it a path to ping, and it may take a little while to run. In fact, what it does is it does this map, this traceroute map, and then it gives you an estimate of how long it's going to take to finish the ping path. And so we're gonna watch this. It'll give us an estimate, and we'll move on, because if the estimate is something like a minute and a half, yeah, look at that. We got to wait 175 seconds. So I'm going to set this in the background and move on, and then we'll come back to it and look at what we got from it. But ping path is completely new to me. It's very cool. I'm going to continue to use it a bit. The last two things on this list are Telnet, which I don't know. Telnet is most famously used for getting into remote systems. So back in the day when we were first getting on the internet, using resources on a remote computer required a terminal window, and Telnet would allow you to take that terminal window to a remote computer. So if you ever remember sitting in a mainframe environment or a computer lab or a cubicle where you'd tap your internet a couple of times, you'd sign in your username, sign in your password, and you're met with a prompt, and then you're supposed to be using software. You have to remember the name of the software, and that was happening in some room in the basement. That's what Telnet was notorious for. You would use Telnet to make that connection to the computer in the basement or the computer in the lab that's in the state, on the other side of the country. Telnet can be used to help you diagnose problems, because Telnet is just a way to connect to the other end and get feedback. So you can use Telnet to do things like connect to the FTP server or connect to the SSH server. Or connect to the web server. But to get reasonable information out of that, you have to spend some real time with Telnet. Not only that, you have to get Telnet installed in your Windows computer. It's not installed by default. You have to go into extra features and add it to your Windows computer. It is installed on a Macintosh by default, so you can use it immediately. But there's more to learn about Telnet. I guess what I should say is I seldom pull it out of my toolkit. I use it to literally get in and use a computer. I don't necessarily use it to test internet connections, even though it is a diagnostics tool that can be used that way. It's on this article. You're welcome to read about it. There's even this bit here, how to get it installed on your Windows computer. It is just a checkbox to put it on your computer. And this, at the end of this article, Paul, is what I was thinking. How to fix your network connection. If you're in a Windows computer, you won't find this on a Macintosh. There is the Network Troubleshooter. If you go into Start, Settings, Network Internet Status, under Change Your Network Settings, you can use the Network Troubleshooter. So if I go here to Start, Settings, this is something that's provided by Windows or by Microsoft. They've got a number of different troubleshooters. What am I looking at? Internet, network and internet. Looking for status. Oh, I forget how slow this computer works when I'm streaming. And there's a troubleshooter here, right here. Network troubleshooter. Diagnose and fix network problems. And so this is an automator. If you click on that, it starts up this automated troubleshooter, and it just looks for the common kinds of problems with Windows setups. One of the things that could give you that, Paul, is if you had a static IP address set. I think we've actually looked at that. I don't think you do. But that's an example of something that can cause that problem, where you could be connected to the Wi-Fi, but it won't set up to be used on the internet. So this kind of troubleshooter would be able to see and resolve that problem for you, amongst other handful of problems.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
See if that brings any. Here it is, giving me my interview. It's saying if you're not, it's saying which network adapter needs to be diagnosed. So it sees that I've got a couple of different ways to get connected, and it wants me to tell them which one I'm having trouble with. Paul, the other thing I think I would try is you can run an Ethernet cable to that deco from your laptop.
Yeah, and I'm close enough to do that.
So I would do that just to make sure that that computer is able to talk to the deco, because you've got some
You know, it stopped connecting spontaneously. I didn't change any settings or anything like that. One day it worked, next day it didn't.
I understand. And it might be something as crazy as Wi-Fi compatibility. It could be that your Wi-Fi in that laptop has had some kind of failure, and now this is the way it's behaving. But we want to do the simple stuff first. In fact, another great way to test to see if it's a hardware problem would be to use one of those live CDs to boot the computer under Linux and see if you can make a Wi-Fi connection using Linux.
Okay, that's with the thumb drive?
Yeah, you can use a thumb drive or you can burn a disk. But I would recommend using – I have a thumb drive like that just at my ready. If somebody comes in and we can't just hit a couple of options or reset a couple of things and the Wi-Fi's still not working, then I'll reboot the computer using a live disk and see if Linux will connect wirelessly. If Linux connects wirelessly –
Load the thumb drive with that?
Well, you know what? A couple of weeks ago, last week?
About it.
There's one called Ventoy that I recommend. You download the Ventoy creator for Windows, and that will look at a USB drive that you plug in, and it will prep it for an ISO image without you having to do much more than next, next, next. It'll create Ventoy on a USB drive. About the most important thing is to verify that you're pointing at your USB drive. If you have,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to get it
loaded on the computer.
That's right. You don't want to get it confused with your hard drive or something else you've got connected to your computer. If you're afraid you might do that, I recommend disconnecting all external drives before you do any of these kinds of setups, so there's no confusion.
Sure.
But then that'll create a USB drive. I've actually, since we're still in presentation mode, I'm going to plug my Ventoy in right now, and it should pop up on my screen. Let me get this stuff out of – oh, the window that I thought we were going to come back and look at, I just closed. Okay. The Ventoy drive just popped up on my screen. Ping, tap.
That would be good for the stack of old laptops that I have that I can't boot up.
Yeah, it would be a good test to go through each one of them and see if they're still usable with a different operating system.
Well,
so
mainly I'd want to get my pictures down and stuff like that.
So if you look here in my Windows computer, there is a drive called Ventoy. It just appears like – when it's done, it just appears as a USB drive. And then in that USB drive, you can drop in any ISO image that you might want to use. So you don't have to prep the USB. I mean, there's all these tools out there for prepping USB. I would go and download an ISO of Linux Mint or Parrot Security or – a new one that I was playing with is called Elementary OS. It's a really nice, pretty operating system. But you download that file. It's an ISO. It's a .iso file that you download. You drop it on your Ventoy storage, and then when you reboot on the Ventoy, it shows up as a selection to boot the computer.
Okay. I just did a screen print of your
my list of
your list,
yeah. ISOs there. Well, you can use whatever ISO you want, but those are the ones I've been using.
By the way, the low-tech way I did that was that this is a touchscreen computer, so I just expanded it so it was easy to read and then did a print screen.
All right. So I'm sorry that I closed the window. We were waiting for that 175 seconds, and we're waiting for it again now. But I did pass that article link in the chat, right? So you guys got that, and I'll put it on today's meeting. And Jim, like I continue to say, almost everything in that list, I don't think ping, PathPing or network troubleshooter is available on the Macintosh, but the other terms are the NS lookup, ping, and traceroute are all available in Linux and on Macintosh. They're standard staples for trying to diagnose network connectivity problems. Hi, Maggie. I saw you joined us. Hi, Mom. Good to see you this morning.
You can't see me because I have dark glasses on.
Okay. I was wondering why it was so dark in here. Yes.
Well, when I joined the meeting this morning, the three little dots down in the bottom of the Google Meet, where we go to set the background and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
The troubleshooting and help was lit up. And so I went to troubleshooting and help.
It was highlighted.
And in there, it had a little red dot on it.
Okay, yeah.
So I went to it, and it says network stability and some recommendations, move closer to your Wi-Fi and all this. But what I found really interesting was it talks about the system load, and it gives me a CPU.
I'm looking at it right CPU. Now. That's new, isn't it?
Yeah, I've never seen this before. That's what I was trying to get to. But it has
yeah, I haven't seen it either. They've
meeting go and
look at that. They're just dumping stuff in here. We're still sharing my other screen. But
yeah,
let's
present for a minute.
Yeah, let's finish this because that path ping command is now appearing on my screen. So if you guys see that. Oh, here I got it. Well, so this is what that path ping looks like. It shows you the traceroute path to your destination, and then it gives you statistics on that path, showing you what information was lost, how much was sent, showing you success rate, showing you the return time of each one of those sites. So that's what I was trying to show you. The path ping gives you the same kinds of information as those two individual applications, as path or as traceroute, but it puts it into one. What you give up is speed. That took quite a long time to bring us that information. So you may find it's quicker to use the other two than this, but this is still a cool command I hadn't seen before. I want to turn off presentation mode, and I want to open what you were just looking at. Hopefully, like this, you'll be able to see it okay. Going into troubleshooting and help on Google Meet, they have a connection delay in real-time graph. You guys see that? And they've got a system load graph showing you how much CPU is being used. I think this is very helpful. I'm going to hit very helpful on both of these.
Your CPU usage looks extremely different than mine because mine is down at the bottom with a few peaks in it.
Yep.
Well, yours is up at the top with a couple of drops.
See, now you believe me when I say that my computer's just aching when I'm doing this streaming stuff. If I were to turn off the YouTube stream and the OBS software, mine would drop down below 25%.
So very high values may reduce call quality. So I'm sitting at 25% with a couple of peaks to 75%. So the call quality is quite good today.
It should be. And I would also look at your connection delay. This is kind of like the ping we were just talking about.
Connection delay is all underneath the 150.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Anyways, I've never seen it before, and Google Meet keeps doing things to us because, like, one week it was a different something or other, and so it's changing.
We got the whiteboard. We didn't have that before.
Yeah. So, yeah, Google Meet's, I'm liking it so much better than Zoom, and I'm sharing that with everybody that I know. I did a support group get-together.
Okay.
And instead of Facebook Meet or any of those things, Messenger Meets, I'm very happy with Google Meet.
Well, that is the end of my diagnosing internet problems. I put the link in our chat, and I'll put it on today's meeting. And I do have some other stuff here. Did anybody bring their own topics, things they wanted to share today? I don't see anybody jumping out there. We'll do some recommendations, but I did want to follow up on Google Photo Storage ending on June 1st. This is like, what is this? Why did I put this in the lineup? Oh, I put this in the lineup because if you have a Pixel phone, this is the only reason I put this in our lineup. I didn't know this until I read this article, but if you own one of Google's phones, you're going to continue to get unlimited storage. If your cell phone, if your mobile device is branded Google Pixel, you're not getting your unlimited taken away from you. Interesting marketing technique of theirs. The
if, only, if what's marked, what?
If your phone is a Google Pixel, like my phone's a Huawei. Yours might be a Motorola. But if you bought one of the Google Pixel phones, then you're not losing your unlimited photo storage June 1st.
So I have a Samsung.
Yeah, so you're losing it. Most people don't have a Google Pixel.
Well, I'm losing it in more ways than one.
But that's the only reason I stuck that in the lineup, is I wanted to share that with you guys, is that there is actually a specific piece of hardware out there that will not lose its unlimited photo storage, whereas the rest of us are.
So what does that mean then? Does it just come, we won't have it on our phone, or we can't go to a place from our phone?
Well, on June 1st, Google has been telling us for the last 6 months, I'm putting a link to this article in our chat, they've been telling us that they're going to take away the unlimited storage. The unlimited storage is the way you can synchronize your photos, not in their raw form, not in their original form, but in a high definition form. If you upload them to Google's cloud services using Google Photos in a high definition, not original, then you can use as much space as you want. You can have as many photos as you want out there in the cloud through Google. This has been going on for years now. If you want the originals, you got to pay for space. You only have about 15 gigabytes if you want your original photos. But if you don't mind downgrading your photos to high quality, which is still very high quality, then you've got an unlimited backup until June 1st, because around December, they decided to take it away. And the way they're taking it away, Mom, is they're allowing everything you already have in Google Photos to remain. And only the new stuff you add will count towards the 15 gigabytes that they've limited it to now. So already this morning, we've had talk because Amazon offers unlimited photos. So if you're ready to switch cloud platforms because you don't want to buy space from Google, you probably have a Amazon Prime. I mean, what a smart idea for Amazon Prime, for Amazon to just say, oh, you have a Prime account? Well, you've got unlimited with us, because just about everybody has a Prime account. So there's your unlimited photos. It's on Amazon. So I can't help but imagine there'll be a lot of people thinking, yeah, that's as good as using Google. I'm going to switch over to Amazon, which
okay.
I don't have an Amazon link, but if somebody finds an article about Amazon and it's unlimited photos, send me the link or put it in the chat room.
What level of photos do they do? They do the whole thing, or is it just that same downgraded photos they save for you?
I apologize. I have not searched that at all. Amazon's unlimited photos. I'm doing a Google search now. Photo storage. What are the things to expect? Unlimited photo storage. Secure online service. Photos and videos, back up all your photos to the cloud. All Amazon customers get 5 gigabytes of full resolution and video storage. Prime customers get unlimited full resolution. So if you have, wow, that's quite a bit different. So if you are an Amazon user, if you've got an Amazon account, you get 5 gigabytes of full resolution. If you're a Prime member, you get unlimited full resolution. So that's an even better deal than Google was giving us. I might be switching over. I might switch over just because I'm a cheapskate.
No loyalty.
I have no loyalty. They're all tracking us, so who do I care which one I'm loyal to?
Right.
Well, cool. Let me stick that Amazon. Amazon photo storage.
I just posted what it says if you cancel your Amazon Prime membership in the chat.
Oh, yeah?
What
does it say if you cancel?
Allow it to expire. You'll still retain the 5 gigabyte combined photos and video storage offered to all Amazon customers. Learn more about Amazon storage on this. Yeah. So I posted two links.
Awesome.
Great.
I'm going to open those up so I don't lose them.
Oh, and now I'm checking out the sync thing. You have to set it to auto save in settings.
I'm really curious how it works on its devices. Like the Google stuff just integrates so nicely. Oh, I just closed it. I didn't close it. I don't want those on the side. I lost the meat. No. There I am.
As a Prime member, you get unlimited full-resolution photo storage and 5 gigabyte for video. With storage plans starting as low as $1.99 a month, I'm on the Canadian site, you can secure your videos while also freeing up space on your mobile phone.
Oh, they're charging.
Oh, but that's for video. Like, you get 5 gig video space and then unlimited photo space. But
unlimited full-resolution photo space plus 5 gigabytes of video storage. That's with a Prime customer.
Right. And if you need more video space, then you can purchase it.
Gosh, I haven't even paid attention to the Google Photo thing if it's synchronized my videos.
I don't think Google Photo does, actually. I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, I'm not something to look at.
Yeah.
Amazon Photo Storage. I'm just making a note here. Google Video versus Amazon. That could be a follow-up for next week. Find out what's going on with the Amazon Photo Storage.
When we get to recommendations, I have one.
Okay. I brought a couple of follow-ups other than this one, but the folks aren't here. I was hoping Jim Cunningham would be here. I wanted to hear about his router stuff, and I was hoping Judy would be here because I found her email notification issue with the Macintosh, and it is so arcane and cryptic that I have a link to show how to do it. But you know how each week she talks about getting 4 notifications. Two of those notifications are from calendar entries off of her Macintosh. What the Macintosh does is you have a calendar on your Macintosh computer, and every entry in the calendar can be sent to you as an email message. And so that gets annoying. If you own a Macintosh and you're using a calendar on your phone, you don't need an email to remind you there's a calendar entry. And so you end up getting double notifications. What I found surprising was how arcane it was to turn off. And so I've got a link here for that. I'm going to leave it in my lineup for when Judy's with us next so that I will share it with her then. But since I'm talking about it now, I will share it in our chat and add it to our list, but I'll bring it up next week if she's here too. This is for you, Judy, wherever you are.
Well, Jim Cunningham is in a canyon in Colorado in his camper, and they have very, very poor internet connection. So,
well, that would explain why he's not with us here today.
Yeah. Their data, even, like, they're working off data off of their iPhones, and yeah, it's not connecting very well. It's been quite a while to send me a picture of their campsite, you know, so that's where they are.
I've got a really quick one-off that I thought you guys would find interesting, funny, something to ponder. Ford has filed for a patent that uses vehicle cameras to identify billboards, so that additional information can be brought up on your infotainment screen. I mean, this is in its infancy, so who knows how this is going to play out. But if you could imagine your phone, your car, your modern day car, has a number of cameras that already exist in it that are assisting with things like self-driving and parking and things of that nature. And Ford has filed for a patent that would allow it to use those cameras to scan the horizon looking for points of interest, bulletin board, I call them points of interest, and billboards that it can identify using recognition software and then bring up additional information on your car's infotainment screen, such as website, phone number, map of directions, trying to add more value to those billboards on the highway.
Okay, this, Scott, I got a question for you.
Yes.
What's going to happen when you drive by one of those old Burmese fence post signs?
Do you
even know what they are?
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, Jesus, what a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
Burmese used to have, they didn't have billboards. They had little signs. They were probably 3 foot by 6 inches, and they nailed them to a fence post. A farmer's fence post, and there was a series of them, and it would have a little jingle written out on these, you know, something, 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 and the very last one would be with Burmese shave. I'll look them up for you.
Okay, it sounds familiar, but I'm really not certain what we're talking about.
Well, I'm wondering if you'll get a video of the girl in the little pink bikini instead of a just a picture that is distracting you from driving, if you know the song.
Okay. Mom, what were you?
The lady is staring at the screen instead of the highway.
Yeah, that's right.
Everything about this seems wrong, doesn't it?
It's, what? She wore an itsy bitsy teeny. No, it's not that one. It's another one about.
Well, I want.
Yellow polka dot bikini.
I find it really fascinating that they would be working on facial. It's essentially recognition software. It's billboard recognition software. So the idea is that your car is much more self-aware of the things that are out there in front of you and bringing up dynamic information. But it seems to me a more accurate way for Ford to do this would just be placing points on a map. Right? Because we're using maps to determine where we are. So why wouldn't the infotainment center already be showing us our route? And as we approached these areas, what they really have is permission to put those advertising up on your screen. It has nothing to do with a camera being able to see a billboard. It has to do with where you're located, whether they have permission to show you advertising or not. I'll take it a step farther. If you really want to use the bulletin, the billboard, which I do think is kind of cool, it doesn't need to recognize the graphic because the billboard could just have a QR code on it.
Yeah.
Right? And why aren't there just QR codes on all these boards? We're starting to see them really pop up in places. So you could assume they're going to have a QR code where that's where all the extra information could come from. It doesn't have to spend any time trying to recognize what billboard it is.
Some of you have probably seen them in museums now. That's they've got it all the signs in there have got the QR codes, so you can read the seven letters on the little card in the museum, or you can have a book on your cell phone.
Well, I find it just very interesting. It's a sign of where we're going in the future, or at least what Ford thinks that you're going to find interesting as in a vehicle. They filed for this patent. I don't know. I think
two features it needs is auditory only, so it can talk to you but not distract you with pictures, and you should be able to turn it off very easily.
Paul, I was going to just go one step farther and say I'm expecting it to drive me, so I'll have time to read the bulletin board. I'll be able to Google search it on my phone. Of course, it's okay for me to look at the screen because the car is driving.
And it'll save a video of your own accident.
Right.
Maybe they should call it the new Edsel program.
The new Edsel program.
I posted the lyrics and a YouTube video of the girl wearing nothing but a smile and a towel in the picture on the billboard in the field near the big old highway, Del Reeves. So there you go for the other generation that doesn't have the song as an earworm for the rest of the day.
Oh, that's a commercial. Go away, commercial.
You can skip the ad. Yeah.
Here we go. Del Reeves. Okay.
Who is a girl wearing nothing but a smile? That's Al in the picture on the billboard in the field near the big old highway.
I've never heard this song before.
Listen to
as a boy. Hey, was that audio coming through?
Yeah, we can hear it.
Okay, cool. I think it came through my speakers. I think I just realized I've been set up with strange audio.
You asked a question about what do we listen to in our house. I'm afraid we were just strictly TV.
Oh. What about in the car? Didn't you have a radio in the car?
An 8-track going up and down the Cassiar and the Alcan. I grew up on Jesus Christ Superstar and Fleetwood Mac, and a little bit of Neil Diamond.
Oh, also Johnny.
John Denver, John too. Denver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, John Denver a lot. But my mom listened to CBC radio with classical music, and my dad listened to the country western station. So I got both sides of it, you know, depending if I was in the garage or in the house or who was driving. So.
Well,
I'm afraid headphones came out pretty early on when our kids were teenagers, so they did a lot of, you know, plugs in their ears for whatever we were listening to and they didn't like.
The Walkman generation.
Yeah, we never had that, that's for sure. Oh, gee. Well, actually, our first few cars didn't have radios in them. You know, that was an add-on aftermarket, and that wasn't happening.
So. We only had one earplug for our transistor radios, right? So you could still hear the car on the other ear.
Hard to share, isn't it?
That's funny.
Well, there was a reason you only had one earplug, because they gobbled up battery like mad. I had a transistor radio that fit in my shirt pocket and with an earpiece, and it was good for about 4 days on the 9-volt battery if you listen to it pretty much steady.
Wow, that's an expensive use.
Well,
4 days on a 9-volt.
Nine volts weren't all that expensive at that time, but it was, yeah.
Your bang for your buck is not very good.
and there was no external power supply plug-in. You ran on the battery no matter what.
Yeah. I just had
it. No rechargeables.
No rechargeables, that's right. Or Bluetooth. Have you ever Bluetoothed your AM transistor radio to a speaker? How do you make that work? Well, I have exhausted the topics I wanted to share with you today. I do have other topics.
Cheryl wants to do recommendations.
Let's do recommendations. Cheryl, what you got?
Okay, my cousin who has two nerdy teenagers in the house, and they're very, very creative, sent us this thing and said, you have to watch The Mitchells and the Machines. And The Mitchells and the Machines is an animated, I laughed right out loud. It's absolutely hilarious. You know, the teenage girl has been making movies, and that's her whole focus in life. And the dad is a very traditional, you know, you don't need computers kind of guy. And they end up taking on these machines, these robots that are going to annihilate all humans. It is hilarious. It's very... We figured that, Sandy, your granddaughter was featured in it.
They saw BB in one of the characters.
Really?
Oh, definitely. You'll see it as soon as you get in there. But Dad is not Scott, that's for sure.
I don't play a very good conservative father. Neophyte. Techno-neophyte. What is that called again? The Mitchells versus the Machines?
Yep.
Well, you're not the only ones that have been saying good things about that movie. And BB and Yuya watched it together, and they loved it.
Of course they did.
We'll have to check it out.
It's just a fun one. You know, it's
might be a good one to invite Josie to watch with you.
Yeah, right. Okay, this is me with my sunglasses. There hasn't been a lot of real definite viewing going on around here since eye surgery, but it's coming back.
You look too cool for us, Mom. You look too cool for us.
They better look cool. They cost enough.
Well, and we can see what's on her TV screen or her computer screen, too.
Oh, you can see my TV's on? I forgot that. I have it turned down really low, I guess.
Your computer screen is reflecting in your glasses.
The computer. Okay, good. Now you don't know I have the TV on, too.
Go ahead, Mom.
We watched the new series from Apple called Mosquito Coast.
Oh, yes.
Now, there's an old movie with,
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren. In fact, it was the first time I remember ever seeing Helen Mirren in an American film. She was quite good. Very young, you won't recognize her. There's that movie, but this is altogether different and kind of slow, but it's kind of one of those that draws you in. So we only had 4 episodes. Apparently it's on once a week. Maybe some of you have already started that. I don't know. We found it on Radiosity, but I think
it's an Apple, isn't it?
It's an Apple original, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I started to look at it and was so impressed with the beginning of it that I had to stop and go, no, I got to watch this with Yuya. She's going to enjoy this. At least the very first episode, the way they introduced the characters, the very beginning, mm-hmm. the entrance to it was so impressive. And then the lead character, I remember the movie Mosquito Coast with Harrison Ford. And I thought that from what I could remember from the original movie, this guy was channeling Harrison Ford. Did you feel that way as you watched it? I mean, it just felt like the character. I shut it down after just a few minutes. I'm like, I'm going to save it. We're going to watch this first episode together, see what she thinks of it.
I think I may need to go back to the movie because I guess I had forgotten to think of him as that person. So I thought maybe this was altogether a new story. But now that you say that and Harrison Ford and where they're traveling, I'm beginning to think, oh, yeah, it must be the same story.
I think it's the same story, but it's been broken out into a series instead of the movie. I was always impressed with it as a kid. It's not the kind of content – I don't remember the original movie when it came out, but it's not kid content. I was a kid at the time. I was infatuated with Harrison Ford being in it because that was Han Solo.
Oh, yes.
But I was also fascinated because there's this subplot in it where he's making ice from fire.
Yes.
And he's bringing that to natives, the ability to store food and be able to cool things down. And so I was always fascinated that he was able to go into this kind of tribal jungle area and with very few resources build a machine that would chuck out ice, just being the tech nerd I am. That's one of the reasons I'm so aware of the movie. And I would put the movie on our recommendation list because I remember really enjoying it and thinking it was interesting.
It wasn't really uplifting.
No, it's a sad movie. I'm sorry. It's not an uplifting movie. No, not at all. No. In fact, I expect
funny parts, but it's not uplifting.
Yeah, you're right. It is not. It's a somber movie.
That's kind of how the series starts out. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I got for you guys. Sorry.
But the story of the Mosquito Coast is the story of a very intelligent guy who is disenfranchised by capitalism and the way life is being lived and is searching a different way to do things.
And trying to bring his family with him on this search.
Yeah, yeah. There's got to be
cooperative.
There's got to be a different way to do things, and I think that would appeal to anyone in this crowd. Any of us that have looked for alternative lifestyles could appreciate what he was looking for. Maybe not what he found, but what he was looking for.
Yeah, his hope.
Well, cool. Those are neat recommendations. Anybody else got anything they'd like to add? I have recently gone back to a show that took me a while to get into that I now find incredibly humorous. It's called What We Do in the Shadows. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah.
It is a kind of documentary style like The Office. If you ever watched The Office, there's a fictional camera crew running around doing interviews with the main characters, catching them in their home life or out on the streets. So it's that kind of style program. If you found that kind of style program interesting, then that's exactly what this is, What We've Done in the Shadows. The difference is they're vampires. They're vampire roommates living in Staten Island.
So I start to write it down and get to the word vampire and I go,
I would give this a shot. It is really funny stuff. They are contemporized vampires. They're actually vampires, old Victorian style vampires that are having to survive in this modern world. They've got strange names for things. They've got odd expressions when they're using cell phones or TVs. They're a little lost. They know what's going on because they've been around for hundreds of years. But again, they've been around for hundreds of years. They didn't need those devices. So they're not quite up to it the way other people are. And they end up they're kind of nerdy vampires. They haven't been all that successful. The few hundred years that they've been on Staten Island, they should have been able to take over a lot more space, like maybe the entire city of New York. And they haven't. They've only been able to bring their neighborhood with them, just a couple of houses down the road. So even the vampires in this world kind of look down on these vampires as not being very successful. It is a full comedy. It is very funny. I did not say that again.
What platform?
They originated on Fox, like on the FX channel. Where would you find it? I'd have to do a just watch to see where you find it. And it's based on a movie that I have not seen. But I'll tell you, I tried to watch it because people said good things about this series a couple years ago, and I didn't get past the first episode. And I decided to try it again. I watched the first episode again, the second episode, all right. But it was really, by the time I got to the third episode, they were in a city council meeting trying to influence the politics in their area. And the way that they went about it, the grievances they had and the way they swayed assembly members and the effect they had on their community. By the end of it, I was laughing out loud. And so now they've got two seasons and I'm almost done with the second season. By the second season, they've been successful enough that they've brought in some real actors for one of their big episodes has a whole bunch of actors in it who you might suspect might be vampires, and they're reaffirming these guys are vampires. They're the head of the vampire council because they have to go answer to them for something they did. So I found it really funny, but I also found it something I had to give two chances at to appreciate. And I'm looking it up on Just Watch now to see, and wow. In the United States, it's not very clear. Hoopla. Never heard of Hoopla.
Oh.
Wait, Hoopla. That's a library service, isn't it?
Yeah. We have Hoopla through our library, but you can watch videos and things on it too. So.
Well, it's available on Hoopla. Hoopla's free.
Well, Hoopla, I don't know. I always have to sign in. It's got audio and video. It's got music and stuff. But I have to sign in through my library membership.
Yeah. Yeah, you turned me on to Hoopla, and I found that my library membership from the Anchorage Public Library supported it. Mm-hmm. And so I got into Hoopla, and there's a lot of stuff there to watch. This is some really current content that you could watch for free on that with your library membership.
Yeah. I just found a piece of paper from one of our computer things. I'm redoing my office, and I've got two things on it that I'm wondering came from this group or from my book club. One is Home Before Dark, a TV series, and the other is Station 11, which is virus-related. Those are my notes. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Station 11 is a book that I recommended a long time ago. I still recommend it. It was poignant during this COVID experience, but it was written a few years before, and it's a very easy read. It doesn't get too technical. It spends its time in social interactions and situations. And so you don't get bogged down in needing a lot of science to understand the story of what's going on. So I think I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's approachable from anybody.
Okay.
The genre isn't locked into anything except this dystopian world after the fact.
But and it's actually kind of opposed to computer virus. It is actually disease virus.
That's right. And it's kind of a boring dystopia because you're not there a year after the conflict. You're there 10 years out. So like things are kind of stabilized. There's a way to life now. There's a way to behave. There's a way things work. And so it's I kind of think of it as a boring dystopia.
Mm. Okay.
And I do. I still recommend it. It's one of my favorite books.
And do you know anything about Home Before Dark, a TV series?
I'm trying to remember that.
Well,
Home
that
Before Dark.
Familiar.
And I wrote it down beside Yellowstone, so it could have been from this group.
Hold on a second. Let me look it up. Oh, I haven't watched this. A girl moves to Lakeside Town where her father once lived. While she's there, she unearths a cold case. Ah! I haven't watched it. But this is that show that was created based on a true story or based on a true circumstance. And this, it, I think it profiles this young girl that that acted as a reporter in her small town. It was just something that she was doing. She started doing investigations into a cold case.
Okay.
It was made for Apple TV. Let's see. The series is based on the life of a young journalist, Hildy Lysak. Let's see here. It seems like this was based on a true thing, but maybe it's not. For some reason, I was thinking it was based on a true situation. Lead as forthcoming book series. Well, I'm trying to skim through the Wikipedia page. I can't tell.
Okay.
But that's what it is. It's this story of this young person investigating cold cases because she's bored in her new town.
I have done my own little file management, and instead of just writing it on a scrap of paper, I've been keeping my computer notes and what to watch in a book. So I've transferred it into there, and we'll see.
Well, you know what I've started doing on that note? Is that I have started using, I don't know if you have used track.tv.
Oh, you told us about that one. Yeah, you told us about that the day that you did the Kodi thing, and you could keep track of what you're watching and stuff like that. The other thing I do is in Netflix and in Prime Video, you can keep things to my list. So I go out and find them, and then I keep things into my profile or my list or whatever it's called.
Favorite. So to expand on track, where I was going with that is I have created a list called Computer Club Recommendations, and I've made that link available on the last meeting post, but I will start making it available on every meet post that I make, every blog post. It'll just be one of those. And I have not filled it up with everything. It's only a pre-list, as you can see on my screen. But my goal is to have everything we talk about in this list. Okay. And I will pass you the link, copy, in the chat right now so you can look at it on your own computer.
I'll keep it in my session.
And that link will be where you can go if you're looking for something to watch that we talked about in one of our meetings. It will be here. If you play with track online, you'll see there's different ways to organize it. You can sort by popularity or runtime, percentage, your rating, title, alphabetical title.
You're cyberpunk?
Always. That's me.
And I can rate you or I can friend you.
Yeah, if you get a track account, you can follow me. You can see the ridiculous amount of TV and videos that I have watched since I got my track account.
And I can follow you. Wait a minute. Or I probably have to have an account.
Yeah, you'd have to have an account.
Collection. I think I lost it. You have one follower.
I do. I think I do. Yeah, one follower. I don't care. I care about keeping track of this information, and I've mentioned to you guys a couple of times, I wish I had a way that I could add the, because what I do right now, and I'll continue to do it for a while, if you look at one of our blog posts, I put information from Wikipedia and Just Watch. So like here's last week's.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bring it up. I make this cool artwork that I'm fairly proud of that I post on Instagram now too. And there's the podcast right here. And then as you go down the page, we've got the topics that we covered. And then we have recommended TV and recommended movies, podcasts, apps, books, whatever else we've been recommending. And I take a little – what's that?
You haven't sent us the link to that. What is that?
This is our website, sccclub.org.
Oh, that's on the website. Yeah, okay. I'm there, but I have to go to each week.
That's right. And if we recommend something again, I put it on a new post, and so it's recommended in two different places.
Yeah.
I pull an excerpt off of Wikipedia, put a link to the Wikipedia. I put a link to the Just Watch so you can find a place to watch it. But I forever wanted a database where I could just put it in, like a recommendations list that we're running through, just one by one, so you can go back to the list. Well, I found that on Track.
Mm-hmm.
So on Track TV now, when we make a recommendation, where'd it go? I just had it in front of me. It's going to go into this list. And so you can follow this link and see and research a show to watch if you're looking for something to watch. If you get a track account, you can subscribe to the list. And the list can be brought up in some of your programs. Like Kodi will use the list, or Streamio will use the list. So you can step right from the track service over to a watching service.
Well, I just added a bookmark on my Google Chrome to Cyberpunk's San Carlos Computer Club Recommendations.
Yeah. Well, right now there's only 19 things in there, but my goal for the next week is to fill it out. I'm going to be going back through previous blog posts and adding those to this list.
Okay, cool.
Cool. What else we got?
Thanks for that.
Absolutely. What have we got? Any other recommendations?
I was going to say I have a whole list of recommendations now, but it's becoming summer, so I'll probably be outside more. But guess what? It's going to snow tomorrow.
Oh, that's what Bill was saying. That's amazing.
I have one correction to the Mosquito Coast. I was reminded there is a lot of action in it, and one of the episodes for sure. Chasing kind of thing, which you'll find interesting. And they're in Mexico at this particular time. Like I say, we only got to four. But that's kind of interesting when they get into Mexico. I think we're right now, I think below San Diego, maybe a little further. Looks like, I don't know which way they're heading. But
that's interesting. Yeah. If I remember the movie, we don't spend a lot of time in travel. It sounds like they're flushing out this whole story all the way to their destination. Yeah. Whereas in the movie, I don't remember them spending a lot of time in travel.
Yeah, I don't either, except on the Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like they got to where they were starting to go from. Like they got to some place that got them on a boat that was taking them down the river to where their final destination was.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to correct myself.
Well, any other recommendations we should add to this list? Recommendations are not only for TV and movies, even though obviously that's what we enjoy. If there's a website out there you've been using recently that you found helpful, is there an app you've been using recently, a book or a podcast you'd like to recommend? This is the place to do it. You know, I've been listening to a podcast recently that I've thoroughly enjoyed from Vox Media. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to the podcast companies, but they're up in – I've been making a podcast for the Computer Club longer than anybody cared there were podcasts. And now they're starting to consolidate into these big media forces, and Vox is one of them. There's Vox. There's iHeartRadio. There's Spotify. They're just buying up these podcast properties all over the internet. And Vox owns this one. I want to bring it up so that I give you the right name of it. It is not in that list. It's in my podcast list. Here we go. It is called Today Explained. And I've found it thoroughly entertaining because they take one of these topics that's the topic of the day, something that's been in the news that the news mainstream media may have just did a quick 10 minutes on or something. And they flush it out. They spend a lot of time going down that road, doing interviews with people. I'm trying to get something in front of me so I can use. Oh, like they just did one on Jerusalem. How come I can't say it? The town, damn it, in Israel. Thank you, Jerusalem. They just did a 31 minutes of history of the Middle East and that area as it pertains to what is just happening. So they start with what's just happened, and they talk and interview with experts of that area, of that history, and how we've ended up in this point, and where the United States' position is at this point. They did one last week that was on the gas network that was hacked. And so it goes into detail in interviews with people that are all familiar with that area. And so I got – oh, the one before that was Liz Cheney on The Big Lie. So these are very relevant topics, and Vox does a really good job of making them entertaining and educational at the same time. So it's an easy thing for me to recommend to somebody else.
And it's Vox called, with a V, not with an F.
It's Vox. It's V-O-X.
Yeah, okay.
And the podcast, they have a couple of different podcasts. And the podcast I'm referring to is called Today Explained.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I bet you could just ask your Alexa to play the latest episode if you wanted to. You could say, Alexa, play Today Explained. Oh, I don't have my Alexa on.
Oh, no, she's giving me today's hits.
Oh, there you go. Alexa, play the podcast Today Explained.
Sure.
When you ask an Echo to do this stuff, it's typically the last episode.
Do you have to say like Israel Today Explained or anything like that? Or,
well, you know what I was going to say is with Alexa, I had a topic. Did we ever? I'm looking for an article that I had that talks about using the Echo for podcasts. There, do you guys remember me sharing an article that would allow you to use Echo for, because what it had was, and it is kind of like a philosophy. It's the way you talk to your Echo to get it to bring out the podcasts. And so you actually had to kind of train yourself in the language to use Echo for podcasts. And I'm intentionally using Echo instead of the A word, because I don't want to set off your Echoes. And so there's language like if you knew the date of the podcast, you could say play Today Explained from May 5th, and that would give you some control over it. Or if you knew the episode number, you could say play Today Explained number 45. And I'll look for that article because I definitely had it as one of our topics. I can't remember if we actually went through it. But it's a good primer for how to talk to your Echo to bring out these podcasts. They're all in there.
Scott?
Yes, sir.
Talking about your Echoes, Cheryl and I were watching, I believe it was, what was it we were watching here?
I don't know. I thought it was just in all the news or something.
Anyway, yeah. All of a sudden, the Echo said, I'm feeling fine. Thanks for asking. And we just look at each other like, okay.
All right, Bill, now this is where the challenge begins. You need to get into your Echo history and find out what triggered that.
No, we did not.
We were in the middle of watching something, so we didn't go and do that. But I did mention it later on. I said that maybe we should have gone back and seen what it was. But it was something on the newscast. The woman said something, and it made her. And then another time, she started explaining something to us, and we thought, well, who the heck asked you? You know?
Right. And so, and Scott, refresh my memory. How do you get to the Echo history?
Oh, you know what? I don't remember, but I've got a link for it. Hold on. Let me find the link for it. I put it in my speed dial. Where is it? It's Amazon Music. Music. Is this it? Magic Trick? It's got a weird... Yeah, that's it. Wow.
What's it called?
Is cryptic. If you were going to write this address, it would be amazon.com/Alexa-privacy-APD-RVH. You're obviously not supposed to remember this.
Put it in the link, please.
I'm doing it now. I'll add it to today's blog post as well. Where's my chat? Here we go. This should bring you – this is a link that if you're signed into your Amazon account – of course, you know there's Amazon.ca, Amazon.com. This is an Amazon.com link. If you're signed into your Amazon account and you click this link, it will review voice history, RVH. That's where RVH comes from, review voice history. And this will show you – you can filter by today, the last 30 days, all history – you can filter by your devices. I can see that I've got at least 3 devices that could be taking voice commands. My Fire Stick on my TV, my Echo on the kitchen, and my Echo I hook up every once in a while out here in the office. So I could organize by device, or I could organize by time period. And I could also just show you what I'm looking at so you know what I'm looking at. Review voice history. Amazon.com/Alexa-privacy/APD/RVH review voice history. This is a link I would stick in your favorites so you don't have to remember any of that.
Well, when I went to the link, it wants me to log in and I can't.
Yeah, you have to log in. You're not going to be able to see your history unless you're in your account.
Yeah, but it's telling me that now I have to answer the little secret and I can't seem to get the challenge right. Sorry. I'll have to do it another time.
They're like, you must be a robot. You're not a human. Well, those were traffic crosswalks. Don't you know?
Yeah, between my vision and the way they blur them and they put the sevens and the nines, and I don't know what's an E and what's a, yeah.
You're not Cheryl because you can't identify all those school buses.
Yeah, right.
Only Cheryl would be able to do that.
We don't have school buses right now because everybody's on stay at home.
Have you seen that joke? It's a robot sitting at a computer terminal, and he's asking his human buddy to come click on it so he can continue. Damn it! It asked if I'm a robot. Jim, can you come over here and click on this for me? Well, okay, I've exhausted my topics. What do you got, Paul?
I'm not much of an Alexa user, but I just used your link to go
check
to
your history.
To check my history. Let's see, where did it go? Maybe it was. Anyway, I asked it to tell me a joke, and I was watching TV, the Fire Stick, you know. And so it brought up an image, and I laughed at the joke, and then I said, thank you. And it says, you're welcome. And just, the image just stayed there. And so I said, off, and the image just stayed there. And it stayed there until I said goodbye. Is there something? And then it went away. So is there something that I'm supposed to say that cancels it out?
On your Fire TV? I don't know. That's interesting.
Bill,
you've got an Echo show.
Yes.
What kind of experience do you have when you try doing the same thing on the show?
Do what? I was reading something.
He was trying to turn off whatever you've got on. And don't get Bill started on how he's trying to control the Echo with songs that he wants deleted from his list and pictures he wants to stop being shown. It's not working well.
Well, if I understand what Paul's saying is that he used his Fire Stick TV and the microphone button on the remote, and you asked for a joke, and it told you a joke and left an image on the screen,
right?
And then it wouldn't disappear.
Right.
No.
Is that right?
I said goodbye.
When you said goodbye, it went away?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So now I know that.
Well, and if I was left at a pause wondering how to do that, I'd just hit the home button. I'm sure that would make it go away.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Now, by my image here, you can see that I'm back to Earth.
But, yes.
But I came in hot, and I landed in a vulture's nest.
Oh, for a moment there, I thought you were hanging out with a bunch of turkeys, but no, it's a vulture.
That's a turkey vulture.
Turkey vulture.
Okay.
And I took that picture yesterday, and it was probably close to 100 yards away. Nice.
Wow, it's got nice resolution.
Yeah.
And we love you, Paul, but I see two turkeys.
Well, I'm the chick. I'm just hoping it doesn't try to feed me.
I remember the very first time we were in San Carlos and watching those vultures, and we stayed out on the Bahia one year, and they would circle around the marina. They're quite something.
Hey, Bill, you just had another one of those experiences where random noise was coming through your connection.
What, the...
Just some staticky...
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but it seems to, at least once during the meeting, something just bleeds through for some reason. I don't know what it is. I just mention it. Nothing you can do about it. Just mention it. Hey, have we got anything else to cover? That's it.
Has anybody heard from Chester?
No.
Not last week or this week. I had an update on Amaya and Pete, which some of you guys know. I was going to tell Judy, but Amaya is out of the hospital. And on the mend, they had that bad car accident.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
Is there anything we need to discuss as far as the function and structure of our club? Should we start planning when we're going to be meeting in real life again?
It'll be December if it's ever for us. So
Halloween.
Maybe October. Maybe we should start thinking about real life meetings again in October. I don't know. I don't know how many people are interested. I haven't actually. January.
Yeah, but I would want to like do it to every week, even when I'm home during the summers.
Yeah, I'll keep doing this through the summer. I mean, as long as I'm capable of doing it. What I need to start working out is the reality of being able to do like this and meet in person, because I'm sure people still want to do the coffee time. I mean, there's a lot of people that aren't joining us because they don't feel comfortable doing it in this format.
We could do it in your trailer.
That's right. We'd have to at this point. I'm a little tempted to pricing out one of these new iMacs and just bringing it to Tequila's with me, because I know in a box that would be all the power I'd need to do what we're doing.
Oh,
and
just quick. What was the Apple that you, or the Mac that you recommended as a, you know, the one you really, 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 really like?
Tablet.
The tablet.
Oh, the tablet. I mean, I like it all, but yeah, the one that I thought made the most sense for normal people was the iPad, the standard iPad that sells for $329, but I would buy the one that was $429.
Yeah, but the iPad what? Pro or?
It's called iPad.
It's called iPad.
I think it's.
But what's the add-on? What is the size of the? Okay, the basic RAM. Thing comes with something, and then.
Right. So the 329 comes with 32 gigabytes. Oh, I'm sorry. And you guys are in Canada. So
yeah,
I'm talking in American dollars.
Just go with the gigabytes.
And then the one I would recommend is the 429. It's $100 more, and that's 128 gigs.
Yeah.
128. Okay.
Yeah. And I just think that's a real easy recommendation for normal people. Just, you want to use Netflix, you want to check your maps, you want to use your email, you want to check Facebook. You're not so much, you can do some creation on it. You can do some curating of photos and things of that nature, but you're not trying to put together a show for a TV channel with it. You're not a graphic artist that has your portfolio on it, and that's not the kind of device this is. This is a consumer consumption device. You use it as an e-reader. You can watch your TV shows on it. You can watch you can read the Wall Street Journal on it. It's peppy and fast, so you have a good experience. It's completely up to date. You can buy it right now, and it's good for at least the next 3 to 5 years as far as software updates. It's the A12 chip.
A12, so that's the other thing you said.
Yeah.
A12.
And so it's a little dated at this point, but it doesn't affect the user experience, which is really what Apple sells you on, is the user experience. Apple really wants you to stop paying attention to gigabytes and gigahertz and processor models and RAM sizes. They really want you to pay attention to your user experience. Does it come up fast enough for you? Is the screen clear enough for you? When you tap it, is it responsive enough for you? And I really like this base model iPad. I think it fulfills all that for normal people.
Okay, my
at its price point.
Question about it is, I have my old iPad, and they offer me a
trade-in.
How much does the trade-in have to be to make it worth giving it to them, as opposed to keeping it and using it for some other thing, like we've talked about, like a photo frame?
What's
the financial value that I need to get?
Yeah, did they offer you some financial value? Did they already tell you?
They did a while ago, but I haven't checked recently. And
I mean, I'd like to get $50 to $100 from an old device towards a new device.
Trade in. Okay.
Yeah, and your device is already out of date.
Yeah.
It's already a security problem. It's already a compatibility problem.
And it's a user non-friendly.
It's already going to be a battery problem, because it's right. It's old enough that you're going to start having battery problems with it. So no matter what you repurpose it for, it's not like it's any more function's going to come back to it. All it's going to do is continue to deteriorate. So I think I would be looking for about, I mean, anytime I'm making that kind of decision, it's got to at least have about that much value for me to want to get out of it, or I just need to get out of it. I'm just, you know, it has a cracked screen. It has, yeah, the battery won't hold any juice. Then I really don't care how much I get out of it, just something.
Well, it seems to me the way that the last time I checked, you go on site and you tell them what you've got. And it seems to me it was $25 or $30.
It was about $30, yeah.
Yeah, so
and that's hardly worth it.
If you've got a function for it, I agree, it's not worth it. If you don't have a function for it, keep in mind at some point it's in a drawer and it's stacked with that stuff you're going to have to recycle at some point.
Right.
And trading it in means you don't have to recycle it.
Okay, so get about $50 to $100 or repurpose it.
Yeah, that's kind of my philosophy with it.
Okay.
I typically suck the life out of devices. By the time I'm done with the device, it has no value left in it. It might as well be chucked in a trash can.
He's a device vampire.
I am. Oh, going back to the vampire show, one of the funny tropes in the show is they're roommates in this old Victorian style house in Staten Island. It's been around for hundreds of years. And one of their roommates is an energy vampire. He's not your traditional blood-sucking vampire. He's the kind you run into, like he has the cubicle around the corner from you, and every time he shows up, you're just exhausted having to deal with him. And that's where he gets all the pep in his step, is sucking the energy out of other people. He's the one that complains or is enjoys way too much the workload they're being given. He asks the extra questions about your kids' pictures, and he's at the water cooler with all his own stories, not ready to listen to your stories. It's just this great whole line of comedy that's all about this energy vampire. You guys know this person in real life, but he's actually a vampire. He just doesn't suck blood. He just sucks your soul. He can walk in the daylight because he's that kind of vampire. And throughout the season, they refer back to him at times. And all the vampires admit they don't understand how his thing works. It just does. Like, he openly admits, "Now I don't get it either, but it's what I do." He has no idea how long he's on Earth for. They have a great episode where he gets to just completely abuse his power, and he ends up just a flying, powerful vampire sucking the energy out of the other vampires.
You're telling us too much already.
All right. It's easy to do because it's easy to leave this show without getting that deep into it. Yeah, I definitely had to come back to it to appreciate the humor.
All right. I'm out of here. It's been a slice.
You guys have a wonderful week.
Tech on.
Yeah. Tech on. We'll talk next Tuesday. Feel free to send me ahead of time anything you think would be interesting to talk about, because I'll read the articles and do the research so that we can have it as a discussion. Until next Tuesday, everybody, tech on. This is San Carlos Computer Club. If you're looking for this stuff, just go to sccclub.org. I try and keep that up to date with everything we've talked about. This week, this will be a blog post, this meeting, and it'll have links to the things that we've talked about. I also like to do episode art. That's become one of my side passions. So I make a little piece of artwork that's related to today's meeting, and I've been putting it up on Jigsaw Planet. So if you're bored looking for something to waste time, you can do jigsaw puzzles online of the artwork of our meeting.
Great.
You guys have a great time. I'll see you next week. Love you, Mom. Thanks for showing up.
Bye.
Au revoir.
I hope your eyes get better.
Yeah, that's
good. Everybody have a good one. Bye-bye. See you, Fred.
Bye-bye. You have a good Bye-bye. Week.
See ya. All right, guys. That was it. That was the San Carlos Computer Club. And I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. And I do offer remote support and AT help. What am I saying? I'm trying to talk too fast. And IT help anywhere on the internet. So if you have something out there that you need help with, try giving me a shot. remote@internationalcs.net. And like I said, if you're looking for any of these videos or podcasts, we do a podcast for every video. Every YouTube has a podcast. Podcast has more information, more dialogue, because it normally is from before we hit the streaming button. And I do an intro to each one of them with my family, mostly my daughter, Bibi. The only way to find that is on the podcast. And so if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear my daughter and I introducing each week. And it has been so fun and funny that I've had suggestions that I should make it a separate podcast. So that may come in the future. In the future, we may have an RSS feed of just the intros to the Computer Club podcast. Until next week, everyone, tech on. This is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club, hoping you have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Adios.